Well, good morning. It's nice to see you all again. Some have become old faces in the best sense of the word. I don't want you all looking in the mirror now to check that one out. It's always good to see old friends and also new. And we've come, obviously, to worship the Lord and exalt his name. This morning, of course, and this afternoon, we're going to be speaking about those who faithfully served their generation in difficult circumstances and overcame by the grace of God and have left us an example that we should follow and seek to emulate in the circumstances in which we find ourselves. For none of us are here to please ourselves. We are here as God's redeemed people to praise the Lord and to serve the Lord and be faithful in whatever station in life we find ourselves in. We are not here to please ourselves, to do our own thing, to waste our lives on things that are of no eternal value, because only the things that concern God and his truth are of any real worth. The rest is wood, hay, and stubble. This morning, I'm going to speak about a young girl of 15 years of age who, in the most terrible and difficult of circumstances, served the Lord faithfully, unbendingly, in the face of fierce persecution and privation. Her name was Marie Durand. French accent may not be very good, but anyway, that's what her name was, Marie Durand, who was born in 1705. At the time that persecution against the Huguenots in France was at its height. The Huguenots were the French Reformed Protestants. Not quite sure how they came to be called Huguenots, but that's what they were called. In 1600, they had gained toleration by what was called the Edict of Nantes, by which they were allowed to practice their faith, run their schools, and preach, though there were limitations on where and to whom they could preach. But in 1685, Louis XIV, who was known as the Sun King, who was a wretched, immoral, degenerate king, as most of the French kings were in those days, revoked the Edict of Nantes with the Edict of what was called Fontainebleau, was where one of the main palaces of the French kings was to be found and is to be found to this day. The reason he did this, because his father confessor, that is the priest to whom he confessed his sins, and we shall be dealing with that, God willing, later on in the week, had impressed upon him that the only way that he could atone for the wicked and profligate life that he'd led was to extirpate the heretics, that is the Huguenots, from the land of France. His wife also was a very devout, inverted commas, Romanist, and she had a Jesuit father confessor also, and it was really they who manipulated the King and Queen of France to revoke the Edict of Nantes. The result of this was that the churches were closed, the schools were closed, the practice of the Reform religion was forbidden. They had to present their children to the Roman Catholic priest for baptism, with the intention that they should be brought up as Roman Catholics. Failure to do this resulted in the men being sent to the galleys as galley slaves. You might think galleys sort of departed with the Romans. No, they didn't. They were still used at that time in warfare. The women were imprisoned. Their children were taken from them and put into nunneries to be brought up as papists. Now you just think what it would be like to live in a situation such as that. You may grumble and complain about the slightest infringement on your liberties, and rightly so, because they were dearly bought. But this is the sort of circumstance into which Marie Durand was born. Before the revocation of the Edict of Nantes, from 1685 onward, it was actually revoked. I'm not sure if I told you. In fact, it was revoked in 1685, but prior to that, from 1681, in fact, persecution was in force through what was called the Dragonnades. In Huguenot areas, French soldiers, Roman Catholic soldiers, were billeted with the people for a twofold reason. One, to bankrupt them, and two, to keep an eye on them to see if, in fact, they were obeying the French king, and to find out, in fact, if they were reading the Bible and worshipping secretly. But with the Edict of Nantes, of course, all this was banned. And the result was that between 200,000 and 900,000 Huguenots fled France and settled in various countries in Europe, in the United Kingdom, and in America itself. It was into this situation that Marie Durand was born. Now, her brother was a pastor in what was called the Church of the Desert. You see, the Huguenots had been removed from fertile lands prior to this and herded into an area that was very barren and inhospitable, in a place called Languedoc, which is in the southeast of France. But even there, they made the ground to prosper through hard work, the Protestant work ethic. But it was difficult, and of course they were persecuted, and it came to be known as the Church in the Desert. But it had a twofold meaning, because in Revelation you will find that it talks about the woman fleeing into the wilderness, which is a picture of the church being persecuted by the devil. Well, of course, it was the devil working through the Church of Rome that was doing this. So hence, it had a very practical meaning, but also what we call a mystical meaning. Don't misunderstand mystical, because there is a way of misunderstanding it. Mysterious, perhaps, might be a better word. And I have had the privilege of visiting the Museum of the Desert, Musée du Désert. So there's my French pronunciation again. And just as an aside, before we get to Marie Durand, I saw a Bible with its cover scorched and the edges of the pages scorched. The reason being that there was a raid by the French soldiers on the local chieftain's house, and they were reading the Bible, but the women also were baking at the time. So what they did, they rolled the Bible up in the dough and put it in the oven. And the Bible was not discovered, but it got a bit singed. But when you see that, well, for me at any rate, it had a real poignant effect upon me to realize what these people were suffering, and yet the presence of mind they had to deal with those difficult circumstances. Now, Marie Durand's brother was a pastor in the Church of the Desert. To be a pastor was the death penalty. You didn't go to the galleys. You were executed upon the wheel. I will not go into details. If some of you want to know afterward, I will tell you what that meant. But I can go this far. They were tied to a wagon wheel, and every joint was systematically broken with hammer blows. That was what was reserved for the pastors. They couldn't find her brother at the beginning, and therefore they imprisoned her father, herself, and also her husband. Though she was only 15 years of age, her father had married her to a man called Michael Ceres in order to protect her from the rest. He thought that if she was married and had another name, that she would be safe from imprisonment. But this was not to be the case. Her husband was imprisoned with her father, and she at the age of 15 was sent to the Tower of Constance, which is a round stone tower, very grim looking place that still exists until this day, which also I have visited. It was part of the fortifications of an area on the Mediterranean, which a former king of France had built in the days of the Crusades, and it was there that the Huguenot women were imprisoned. A very grim stone fortress. Very cold and damp in the winter, very hot and humid in the summer. And at the beginning, they were not even allowed out of their room cells where they were incarcerated, though later, through her endeavors in writing to government officials and others, they were actually allowed to go up on the roof and take the air, as they call it. At 15 years of age, she entered that place of death and desperation and hopelessness. And it was said it was like a ray of sunshine entered that grim prison. She's only 15, mark you. From that moment on, she encouraged the other women, who many there before her, many came after her. Many of them had gone mad in their imprisonment, as you can imagine, year on year, separated from home and family. The thought of your children being brought up as papists, the thought of your husband as being a galley slave, all that's known and dear to you is gone. You're separated from it. There is no prospect of release, and the priests of Rome demanding that you recant. So was it any wonder that some snapped and went mad? But she constantly encouraged them. She prayed with them and for them. They sang psalms and Huguenot hymns. In those days, when somebody became a Christian, they were said to become psalm singers. And they used to disappear off into the forests and remote areas to worship the Lord. Some of them were noble men and women as well. She wrote to church authorities and government officials. Eventually they were allowed a psaltery, and also they were allowed, as I've already alluded to take fresh air upon the roof of the building. In fact, she was the one who kept the whole thing together for 37 years. You think about that. 37 years. It was common when people were arrested and women were arrested, their relatives didn't know where they were taken to, but they knew about the Tower of Constance, and they would gather outside and start singing psalms and calling out the names of their loved ones. And they would answer from inside and join with them in the singing of psalms. It's very moving. When you are there, it is so moving. You know, it brings tears to your eyes to think of the awful situation in which they found themselves. Now, these deeds were not being done by a heathen religion, though in effect it is. It wasn't being done by Muslims or Hindus or Buddhists or even atheists, but by the master synagogue of Satan itself, the Church of Rome. In America, like with us, evangelicals need to understand the history of the Church of Rome and the awful wickedness it perpetrated in the days of the zenith of its power. And that's a lesson you need to take to heart today. Now, by the way, you don't go off and hate Roman Catholics because they're victims of the system. You preach the gospel. You pray for them. You witness to them. You don't hate them. Because but for the grace of God, you and I would be in the same situation. And we need to say that. Because some people don't understand that. Oh, how awful, therefore we hate them. No, you don't. You hate the system that did this. And the only way you can deal with that system is preach the truth. And you should have concern for not only Roman Catholics, but anybody who's caught up in false religion and indeed irreligion, that there but for the grace of God go you and I. But this was the system. Read it. Whenever it was in control, it persecuted. Its instruments of torture were devilish. Only a demonically inspired mind could conjure up the things that they did. And here they were in this horrible place, the cold of winter, the heat of summer, day after day after day, separated from their families, not knowing what was going to happen next, under constant threat. But this girl, day by day, she kept them going, praying, singing the psalms, singing hymns, writing to government officials. She even wrote to Voltaire. Some of you may have heard of him, an atheistic philosopher, and Rousseau, and in order that they might be released. Now, I've been there also, and in the rock is carved a word, register, resist. It means to resist. It is said that she was the one who carved it, but we're not sure. Knowing who she was, it almost certainly was her. Resist. She never recanted. And she saw to it that none who were there recanted either. For 37 long years, in the most difficult of circumstances, she held fast to the truth. She encouraged others. She instilled in them a will to resist, to stand up for the truth and for the crown rights of the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, I say to you again, she was 15 years old when this began. So, you see, it doesn't matter about age, does it, really? The Lord can use a young Mary Duran like a young David, as well as those of the older generation. She was eventually released along with 36 others in 1767. That was from 1730 to 1767. She never saw the outside of that tower. That's a long time, friends. Some of you here are not 37 years old, and you look back and you think, oh boy, that's a long time. But imagine all those 37 years you spent in a place like that, and yet remained faithful. You know, if Christians in this country are like ours, and I know they are some, you get a sniffle in the end of the nose, you can't attend the house of God, or you got a slight pain and you can't go and witness, or you've got all sorts of things you have to do because you can't do the work of God, you have to do this and you have to do that, and I know there are duties. And we can find all sorts of excuses as to why we can't. But here was a girl in the most difficult of circumstances, and she could, and she did, and she persevered. She didn't lose heart. She kept them all going on. 1767, she was released. Everything was gone. Everything had changed. All those she knew were dead. All her property of her family had been confiscated, and strangers were dwelling where once her family dwelt. Her friends were all gone, either dead in the galleys or exiled. So she came out to a scene of devastation. That would have been hard to take as well. But you know, God overruled for her. By the way, it was the governor of Languedoc, who was not a Christian, he's a Roman Catholic, but was disgusted at what had happened and was happening to the Huguenot women, who in spite of the objections of Louis XVI, now two kings, from the one that had imprisoned her, he released them all. So that wicked king still on the throne, a descendant of the other one, still wanted them locked up. But he released her, and she lived on for another 11 years. And a Walloon church in Amsterdam. Now the Walloons were, I think, a French speaking. In Holland there's two languages. There's the Flemish, in Belgium, the Flemish and the French. And I think the Walloon is the French. I should have looked that up. Supported her till her death in 1776. God saw to it that she was undertaken for. But this young girl is a challenge to me, and also a thrill. It was both a thrill and a challenge to me to be there, both in that Tower of Constance and in the Museum of the Desert, to see artifacts of that time. Not that the artifacts are the most important, but to put yourself in a very real way, in imagination I know, into the situation in which they found themselves and who were faithful. Now we in the United Kingdom and this country are living on the inheritance that they laid up for us. We have to contend for our liberties in this day and generation. But I'll tell you this, if we do not value our liberties, if we do not make use of our liberties, if we will not defend our liberties, and the best way to defend your liberties is to preach the truth, that is by far and away the best way, they'll be taken from us. God will take them from us. The Bible teaches us that. When Israel sinned and rebelled against God, what happened to it? In fact, the Jews are scattered over the world this very day because of their rejection of the Messiah. And we are no different. If we do not value our liberties, if we as Christians do not use all the spare time we have to serve the Lord, to proclaim His word, to stand up for what's right, and to live the Christian life, because that's the hardest of all, then our liberties may be taken from us. And I trust, young ladies here today, that you will take encouragement from this. Here's a real heroine of the faith that you can look to. I know we say we should be like Christ, but it's good to see Christ, you know, exhibited in a human being, as it were. And to say, I want to be like that young girl. Some of you are young girls here today. Be determined to grow up. Now, I trust that you never have to be locked up like she was. But I trust that you will be faithful in the liberties we have. I know this is taking something out of context, but I'll explain. It says, stand fast therefore in the liberties wherein Christ had made you free. Now that's really talking about liberty from sin and Satan. But you know, that also brings liberty in this political secular realm also. You see, there was no liberty before the preaching of the gospel. before the Reformation. There was no such thing as liberty. There was only persecution. There was only dictatorship. There was only corruption. And when that ceases, even where there has been liberty, then that liberty will go. And I say again to you, the best way of maintaining the liberty that was so dearly bought is that we are Marie Durand, or you'll be hearing of others as well, and we will serve the Lord faithfully in our generation. Amen.